720 WGN, it's the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen here, filling in for Steve Bertrand on this kind of goofy weather Wednesday. Sun peeking out here downtown Chicago. Looks nice now, but as we heard Ryan say, that won't last for too much longer. But what will things look like in the year 2050? That's how we're going to open things up, chatting on the Wintrust Business Lunch today. Liz Hsu is with CMAP, which is the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. So Liz, give us all the answers. What's coming up in 2050? You look a little befuddled by that. Of course, you want help from everyone else, right?
Yeah, I think that we are here to find out a little bit about what residents want for the region in 2050 and how we can prioritize. At CMAP, we plan for transportation, land use, and economy in the region, and we really think about that comprehensively. So how can we promote a strong quality of life for our residents, and how can we promote economic success?
So 312-981-7200, I'd love to hear your feedback. What would you like your world, and well, more specifically here in Chicago, to look like in 2050? And when we ask that question, what do you mean? Is it visually what it looks like, or is it more how things work and run?
Right. So it's about how you get around, what type of place you want to live in, what type of amenities do you want, thinking about natural resources, thinking about parks and open space. Really, what do you want your community and your region to look like? We're thinking about 284 communities, so that's a big task to think across all of them. But there are often common priorities that emerge that people want.
What do you guys do with, not only with this particular project, but with other projects? When you guys come up with plans, what do you guys do with them? Who do you go with that information to? Do you go to businesses, to business leaders, people in the city? How does that all work?
Yeah, so I think the answer is all across the board. We plan for major transportation improvements that receive federal funds, and that's at base what we do, but we also do a lot of work with communities, with nonprofits, with groups throughout the region, elected officials, to really help implement our land use, our transportation, and our economic and environmental recommendations. So providing technical assistance and plans at the community level means we are out on the ground every day talking to residents, talking to elected officials.
And how does this manifest itself? When you say you're looking for feedback, is it broad range? Are there specific topics you're looking for?
Yeah, so right now we have just kicked off a campaign that we're calling Alternative Futures, and that's really thinking about major changes that are happening not just here in the Chicago region, but in the state, in the country, and worldwide, and how that might affect what our region looks like in 2050. So we have five futures. The first of those is constrained resources. We see this already, less funding from the federal government, in some cases less funding from the state government. What does that mean for our communities and what we have on the ground? Thinking about walkable communities, the idea that more and more people are moving to very walkable neighborhoods, and that not just the city of Chicago, but also suburban downtowns. Changed climate and how we'll deal with hotter weather, more flooding, and some of the changes that we're seeing in our weather. Innovative transportation. There's a lot of new technology. There's a lot of kind of fun and engaging things on the horizon. People tend to focus on automated vehicles here. Autonomous vehicles. But there's also a lot of behind-the-scenes technology that really helps us move around a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we need and how can we do better there? And then finally, transformed economy. Thinking about the role, once again, of technology and how that will change how we work, and also thinking about economic stratification and what that means for our residents and their ability to succeed and participate in the economy.
So it breaks down into those five things. So let's say this question posed, what if public resources are further constrained by 2050? Is the answer to that someone just going, oh, that sounds bad? Or is it them trying to dive deeper and saying, okay, if it is restrained, here's what I'd really like people to focus on, here's where my priorities are, or here's ideas that I have? How exactly do people answer it?
Right. So in that future, we actually ask people what services are really most important to you. How would you like to see your municipality, your community deal with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want fewer services? Do you want them to try to coordinate with other municipalities? Are there things you want so badly that you'd be willing to pay a higher tax or a higher fee to fund those,
mm-hmm.
right?
Is it just going to be people tweeting at you guys? Or no, you have some interactive things you'll be doing too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there are interactive kiosks all around the region, and I believe that you can find a map on our website of where those are located. We are also going to be putting together and have already started a series of extensive workshops in communities throughout the region. So once again, you can go to our website and you can find the workshop closest to you. I believe that is cmap.illinois.gov.
You got it. There you go.
and there's also on the website some videos that provide you the same information as on the kiosks and some surveys for you to take. So there are a lot of options for residents to engage.
Or use the hashtag 2050BigIdeas. And you're really talking big ideas. I mean, 2050, we were talking about it with Bill and Wendy. It, in many ways, it's kind of that medium distance. It seems very far away, and it is. I mean, it's 33 years from now, if I did my math correctly. Mm-hmm. But it's still in the short enough term that, yeah, things that happen in 2050, this is kind of where the planning stages on a broad level start to happen for those things.
Right. It takes a long time to build a transportation project. It takes a long time for land use change to happen. You know, buildings go up one at a time. This is, you know, we put our communities together, we change them slowly. But the decisions that we make today really affect that, not only for us, but for our kids. And for the different stage of life that we might be in. Ideally, I'll be retired in 2050. and you know, what kind of community do I want to live in there? What kind of community do you want your kids to live in? What kind of opportunities do you want them to have?
It's interesting because obviously people are coming at this from many different ages and perspectives, but you probably welcome that. I imagine you'd love to hear from an 18-year-old who's leaving high school who in 2050 will be reaching perhaps the height of their career, thinking about retirement. Perhaps there's kids out there with, you know, kids are so smart these days. They are able to research things. They'll be in the prime of their lives at those sorts of things. And I imagine you'll also hear from people that sadly probably know they may not be here, but want to leave a legacy for the next generation of kids. So I imagine that offers a really nice wide range of feedback for you guys.
It does. We're going everywhere from elementary schools to, you know, senior centers and catching everything in between. And we're also trying to hit all different types of places around the region so that we're getting the full breadth of people's experience.
I bet some elementary school kids have some great ideas.
they do, and they're also very optimistic about the future.
Really?
They're the most optimistic about the future being a really positive and great place to
That's
be.
That's fun. It's interesting because they're so inundated. Maybe they're able to either tune out the noise, or maybe they're luckily, blissfully a little bit ignorant, or maybe we're all just a little bit too disdained over some certain things going on. All right, we're going to dive a little bit more into the economic part of that. We're going to talk about what if the economy has been transformed by 2050 in the next segment, and I imagine it will be certainly transformed. That's a nice teaser, right? Yeah, of course, it's going to be transformed. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter at John, that's J-O-N, the Cubs fan, which is a great Twitter handle for the last year, but for the previous 10 years, not so much. I'm joined by Liz Hsu, and she's from CMAP. It says here you're a planning principal. What does that mean? It sounds really important, I'll say that. It's a great title.
Yeah, it means that I help guide some of our policy work and really focusing on right now onto 2050 and the idea that we're putting together a substantive plan for the region and thinking about what our future will look like and how to best plan for transportation improvements, land use change, addressing environmental issues and those sorts of topics.
Is it seeing ideas through, or is it kind of being the middleman for connecting the dots with policy leaders and kind of making everything run on? I don't know. It just seems like a very complex thing to do, to see a plan through from beginning to end.
So a lot of what we do, and I think that you've hit it right on the head, is convening, right, and working with stakeholders. So we bring municipalities together. We bring transportation implementers together to help implement the goals that we set forth with them in the plan. We definitely program for transportation, but on the land use side, you know, what really makes our communities look the way that we do, we make a strong effort to provide assistance to communities as they plan and put their policies in place to guide what's built.
312-981-7200. We'd love your texts on what you want from Chicago, what you want Chicago to look like, how you want it to run in 2050. And one area we're going to focus on is on the economic side, this transform economy. What do you mean when you say that what happens if the economy transformed by 2050? Is it a continuing trend of technology advances we've seen that you guys are looking to happen as we go forward?
Yeah, I think there's two big pieces to this future. The first is that those changes in technology, everyone talks a lot about automation, and that's definitely something that we're seeing, but it's also on a much more granular level. You and I in our jobs today have to use a lot more software programs to do our jobs, right? And we anticipate more of that kind of change. For occupations that are a little bit more physical, we also see more machines doing more and more of the work, or different software programs, different machines really helping guide that work. And the other thing that we're seeing is the growth in the need for soft skills. So communicating with people, customer service, those occupations are also growing.
It's amazing how those two things kind of play together. As we rely more and more on software, it seems like we're losing a little bit on that communication side.
I think it depends on which way you go. There are a lot of jobs that are increasing that are purely that, right? So if you think about the growth in healthcare, for example, nurses have a lot of technical training, but they also have to really be able to work with patients. Elder care, we have a growing senior population, not just in the region, but nationwide. We're all getting older every day, and there's more and more of us. So the idea is that there are, you know, both of those skills might be needed by someone in the new economy, and that you might have to educate yourself more and more frequently, right? So we moved from needing a high school degree to needing a college degree. And now sometimes you need a master's degree. In a future where technology continues to change a lot, you might need to go back more and more often to get education on new skills and new technology. That does have some potential negative implications. Mm-hmm. We're seeing economic stratification already, loss of the middle class in more simple terms. The jobs that we're adding are a little bit more concentrated at the top and the bottom of the income spectrum. So if you're at the bottom, you might have less opportunity to really access all of those skills that you need, that quality education that you need. And that's not necessarily good for the region.
Mm-hmm.
We have a whole set of inclusive growth work where we highlight that kind of economic stratification has a negative impact. Regions that are stratified grow more slowly. They produce fewer jobs. They have less GDP, those sorts of factors. And so if we can find ways and strategies to really make sure that everyone can participate in the economy, we can be more successful.
Right, because as we become more reliant on software, and I imagine, I mean, people love their technological advances. It's no doubt. But with each one, seemingly, for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction on the other side in terms of losing jobs. So when you say that we need more education, does CMAP get involved with trying to plan for that, or is it more just advisory?
So for us, we have most of that implementation is many other stakeholders in the region, from the counties to workforce investment boards. Our big recommendation there is that all of those entities work together and that they work with businesses to really target training to the jobs that are growing, where there are openings for good jobs with an opportunity for economic advancement.
So on a broader range, you guys can kind of be a zoom out lens and offer a map, perhaps a roadmap to success for some of these places, or right. I guess suggested choices. Let's talk a little bit about inclusive growth, which is CMAP speak for equity. It's the idea that our regional economy grows best when everyone has the right opportunity to succeed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dive in a little bit more about where we're falling short on that end right now.
Right. So when you look at us in comparison to other regions, we are simply more segregated economically, right? There are different outcomes depending on where in the region you live, where you were born, where you're being educated, and potentially what your race or ethnicity is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at regions, as I already noted, that have this kind of stratification, they're less successful.
Mm-hmm.
So addressing this issue isn't just helping those populations, it's helping everyone. You cannot be successful as a region if a large part of your population can't participate in the economy. So
on to 50 is a great way to look ahead to 2050, and they want your feedback. CMAP.illinois.gov and the kiosks, right? Or just hashtag, was it CM50? I should have this in front of me.
It's CMAP Big Ideas, or on to 2050 Big Ideas.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Liz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank
you. More Wintrust Business Lunch coming up. Thank you so much, Kim. John Hansen here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. And today we're talking with Sybil Holloway and Yasmeen Curtis. Sybil is from Sib's Breakfast Club, and Yasmeen owns a restaurant, Two Fish, in the Bronzeville neighborhood. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excited to be here? Yes. Don't you like being in the fishbowl? Everyone waving?
I love
waving?
Watching Michigan.
Yeah, like the people look so fun.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day for now, at least. All right, so Sybil Holloway, you started Sib's Breakfast Club in 2008, which sounds like a club I want to join anytime there's some bacon or some eggs around the area. But it's about bringing business leaders together. So give us a little bit about your background and why you started this.
I came from an entrepreneurial background. My dad's owned tons of businesses, restaurants, clothing stores, shoes, everything. So my dad's taught us how to basically recycle the black dollar, and that's what the Breakfast Club is about.
What do you mean by recycle the black dollar?
Meaning for black people to spend money in their own community to help us do better.
And that's important just because obviously you want everyone to support each other.
Yes.
It's difficult enough owning your business, whether you're black or white, but there's obviously certain difficulties in certain communities owning a business.
It is. We don't, you know, and it's not me being prejudiced or anything. We don't get the funding that other people get. So we have to focus on keeping the money within our own community.
So you stick together with bacon grease for breakfast. So tell me how it works. How many businesses are involved, and how does the club manifest itself in day-to-day life?
And ironically, we used to do them in the mornings, like 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays. It's like a party.
Mm-hmm.
We bring in, it's BYOB.
Oh.
We bring in liquor, DJ, we party. It's like a cash mob.
Mm-hmm.
But now we do them on any day of the week.
Okay.
Like we'll be at Two Fish for the kickoff for the Breakfast Club's food and beverage month. So we'll be there from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m.
So you kind of gather a bunch of people and you pick a spot and you funnel people
and
there.
We party.
You know you're going to bring
party.
The party there.
We party. We keep the party going.
So Yasmeen Curtis, you run Two Fish in the Bronzeville neighborhood. First, tell us about Two Fish.
Two Fish in the Bronzeville neighborhood. It's a seafood crab boil restaurant. So it's a low country boil where you eat the food out of the bag, you eat it with your hand, So we have the crab legs, and it's doing well in Bronzeville, and it was something that was needed in the community. So just a great sit down restaurant.
And the Breakfast Club is coming to your place, right?
Yes,
are you ready for this party? You got a spot for the DJ?
I am ready for the party. So we're going to. In order for us to host the Breakfast Club, we have to, so we'll be closed on that Monday.
Okay.
So we're closed on Monday, and we're going to do it that Monday night. So we are ready for them, yes.
What does being a part of Sib's Breakfast Club, and then obviously this big event, what does it mean to you?
I think it means a lot to me. One, in terms of like Sybil, I've been on Sybil a very long time, and I've watched the Breakfast Club grow, and where it evolved into different businesses, you know, not just, you know, a party. She's saying it's just a party, but it's really not. So insurance company, law offices, law firms, you know, that are in the African-American community that need all of this exposure. A lot of African-American leaders that need to come together and speak and talk about different ideas in terms of being like entrepreneurs. So that's exactly what that's about. Now, in between that time, we definitely will have a few cocktails, eat some great food, but we will get to know one another, to know that we're all here to support each other. And I've always admired Sybil for doing it. Like, I want to know, like, are you making any money doing this? So she was like, yes, like it is a business.
Right.
But she has brought so many businesses together. So I mean, I give all my kudos to her.
You got to make one network connection before you have a drink. That should be the rule, one for one, and then you can go up and get another one up at the bar.
You might have to do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you mentioned the networking thing. What is it about chatting with other business leaders about that bringing people together that helps businesses in the long run? What happens in these meetings or in these informal talks that brings people together? Or is it just it's the community feeling about it?
It's, first of all, it's adult only. So it gives adults a chance to get away from all of your little job, corporate America, whatever you're going through. And we are in there, we're having cocktails, eating good food, and you get to just talk without all of the fluff, you know. And then in the meantime, she may find a plumber that she needs, or an electrician, or a corporate lawyer, a doctor. We have everyone in the room.
And so I think that's, you mentioned the recycling, the black dollar, that yes. does it as well there, because then when you are looking for that electrician, for that plumber, you know who to call immediately.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think all of us, and one of our good friends, like, and immediately that comes to mind is Pillar Insurance.
Maurice.
Maurice at Pillar Insurance. When I say Pillar, he is like the insurance guy for the Sibs Breakfast Club, mm-hmm. but like the insurance guy for our community. Mm-hmm. And if you need insurance, that's who we go to. Like, immediately you always think of him because he supports all of the events. But just because that connection is made. Mm-hmm. So recycling the black dollar or recycling the dollars, I think it's great.
So the big event is, and who can go to this event? Is it only people that are in the club? How
no,
does that work?
No, everybody. We want the you want world everybody. To come. We right. want everybody to come support Two Fish so she can be here forever.
And
right,
Two
Jasmine?
And where are you at again in Bronzeville?
We are located at 641 East 47th Street. So that's in between Langley and Champlain. So
she has a great backyard.
Yeah.
Patio.
What's it like running a business, running a restaurant? Because I always talk to people, and if you could see her face right now, she just rolled her eyes to the back of her head and went back in the chair. It is tough. I think a lot of people think they're going to open up a business, and they know the neighborhood. They know the community. I've got this thing. And you're shaking your head. So give it to us.
Okay.
What's the hardest part about opening up a restaurant?
The hardest part about opening up a restaurant is that, one, you have this idea that once you open the doors, all of these people are going to bum rush
the moment you open
the
them.
The moment you
and
open
it won't
the door,
stop, and it'll
and
be.
And it won't stop, and it's going to go on and on and on forever. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have these great employees. Everybody's going to want to work for you. You're going to get, you know, your sister's friends, your cousin's friends. You're going to get all these great people who want to work for you. You're going to make all this money, and you're going to be rich tomorrow.
Right. And in reality.
And in reality, that's not how that happens.
It takes a few years. Yeah.
It takes a few years. It takes hard. It's hard work. It's continuous hard work in terms of, like, the marketing of your business. It's continuously hard work in terms of coaching employees and developing employees. It's continuous hard work in terms of balancing your budget and your finances to make sure that you are able to stay afloat for years to come so that you can have those moments where the doors never stop opening. So it's a lot of hard work, especially in a restaurant, because everybody likes something different.
Right. Absolutely. Everyone's got their own unique taste. It's so funny, Yasmin, when you were kind of laughing about it. Sybil, you were kind of nodding your head and like, I've heard this, I know this, and it's in the business. Do you offer more than just offering getting these people together and providing these big events? Are you kind of like I don't want to say motherly because that kind of has the wrong connotation, but in many ways, an advisory sort of role?
I am. It just happened that way. It just happened. That's why I am like a relief for them. Like, I give you 200 people, so maybe that'll help you pay your rent that week. Mm-hmm. I mean, that month. You know, 200 people on a day where you normally won't get that much business.
Yeah.
So
once again, give us the date and the location again of the next big event.
May 8th.
May 8th.
Sibs Breakfast Club restaurant, food and restaurant kickoff is at Two Fish with Yasmin.
Are you going to promise good weather? So we can get in the back?
Oh, yeah. We're partying.
I'm like, I'm going to promise all the good weather just with the meteorologist.
5
like,
p.m.
It's happening
to 9 p.m.
Today.
Sybil and Yasmin, thank you so much for joining us. Great stuff.
No problem.
We
thank
appreciate you.
720 WGN, the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm John Hansen, filling in for Steve Bertrand, and we're kicking off soon National Volunteer Week, which is a little bit of history. It's brought to you by Points of Light, and it's an opportunity to recognize and thank volunteers who lend their time, talent, voice, and support to causes they care about in their community. And one cause we should all care about is ability to eat. We got a lot of food deserts in our area. 1 in 5 children, I believe, in the state of Illinois suffer hunger at some point in their lives or during the year, and that's a big problem. And the Greater Food Depository here in Chicago does so much great work, and Volunteer Week, National Volunteer Week, is no exception. So Michelle Covington's joined us on the line. She's Director of Volunteer Engagement at the Greater Food Depository of Chicago. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, John.
And, you know, you guys do such incredible work there, and you guys really rely on a lot of volunteers throughout the year.
We do. Our volunteers are a critical part of the Greater Chicago Food Depository's response to hunger. And without them, we simply would not be able to fight hunger in our community.
What do some of the volunteers...
Very integral.
Yeah, I bet. You know, one of my parents' friends, Paul Dell, he's a retired, used to work in the oil industry, and now he drives around with the Greater Chicago Food Depository. What sorts of things do volunteers do in your organization?
So as you mentioned, we do have our volunteer drivers, which help deliver food out into the community. We have over 700 agency partners, so we greatly rely on volunteers to come in and help us with that distribution. They can also come down to the Greater Chicago Food Depository to sort produce, repack bulk items, sort through food drive donations that we receive. And then we also have special events out in the community where we have food drives, bag distributions to collect donations, and some others as well.
So do you use, I mean, we have a week and a month for everything, but it feels like National Volunteer Week should be, well, as long as it can. Do you guys use a week like that to kind of rally the troops a little bit?
Well, actually, it's a big fat party here, John.
That sounds like fun.
We're really focusing on a couple of different sectors. We really are celebrating all of our corporate groups Tuesday through Friday here. And then last Saturday, the 22nd, and this upcoming Saturday, really inviting our volunteer or individual volunteers to come down and celebrate with us. So again, provide a very festive atmosphere on site, refreshments, and encouraging all of the teams that have ongoing volunteers to personalize their appreciation. But we appreciate our volunteers throughout the year. This is only part of our recognition strategy throughout the year. We also hold an event in the fall for those that have provided a certain number of years or hours of service. And then at the end of our fiscal year, we have a large picnic for all of our volunteers to come and join us.
Certainly, we'd love every volunteer out there to just do it out of the kindness of their heart and never worry about recognition or pride. And I imagine most people would do it without any of those sorts of things. But do you find that being an organization that really values its volunteers and shows that love back to them not only keeps them around, but encourages those volunteers to talk to their friends and family and encourage them to join the team?
We do. We have over 23,500 volunteers that donate their time at the Greater Chicago Food Depository annually. And then we also, in addition, many come back. So we have about 40,000 altogether throughout the year. 23,000 of those are unique. So certainly, you know, about a third of our volunteers come back multiple times throughout the year, which is just fantastic.
Michelle, obviously around the holidays is a time we all really focus on a lot of different causes, and rightfully so, a chance of self-reflection. But having this event and coincide with National Volunteer Week here at the end of April, it's at a time I imagine where a lot of people are, I don't know, like you out there, I'm planning for maybe a summer vacation. I'm kind of in a point where I'm thinking a lot about, oh, what am I going to be doing in the future? And maybe waning a little bit in my interest in those causes I should support. Of course, that shouldn't be the case, but it is. Does this give you a nice little benchmark here in the first third part of the year to refocus and say, look, this need of hunger is so great, and it's great every single day of the year?
Exactly. So we are kind of leveraging this opportunity and time of celebration to remind folks that, you know, as the summer is approaching, hunger is not dwindling, unfortunately. And so we're taking this opportunity when we have them here to talk a little bit about some of the other ways in which they can engage with us. You know, we do have a summer meal program. We have a lunch bus program for those children who still need meals throughout the summertime. And again, hunger doesn't wane just because it's the summer. So we definitely encourage folks to hop online and take a look at our volunteer opportunities and come down and join us.
Last year, the Food Depository distributed 70 million pounds of food, 35%, which was fresh produce. And it's because of Michelle Covington and people like her and all the volunteers out there. Thank you guys so much for everything that you do. And Michelle, how can people find out more information if they want to get involved?
Well, we'd love them to come onto our website, which is chicagosfoodbank.org, or they can call us directly at 773-247-3663.
Great, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your time.